take it very seriously. Thank you.
Thanks. Before I introduce our third speaker, I want to say something because both Helga and Shira have spoken about the international solidarity movement and their sense that the presence of the internationals offers support for nonviolent resistance. Two members of the international solidarity movement have been killed while offering this safety to others or trying to. One was a British man who was shot in the face and paralyzed and brain damaged and eventually died. The other was an American woman named Rachel Corrie, who the anniversary, first anniversary of her death is occurring next week. She was run over by a bulldozer while trying to use her body as a shield to prevent the demolition of Palestinian homes. Her cousin, Elizabeth Corrie, is going to be here in Montreal as part of the International Women's Day events on Saturday, March 6th in the Deceve Cinema at Concordia, 1400 de Maisonneuve Boulevard. It's the Pink Library Building there, ground floor. Elizabeth will be speaking about carrying on her cousin's mission of trying to build peace. That is co-sponsored by the Jewish Alliance, Women in Black, Solidarity for Palestinian Human Rights, and other groups. This event is co-sponsored by the Jewish Alliance Against the Occupation and Women in Black, Montreal Women in Black. And sometime during the question and discussion period, people will be passing among you with possibly a literal hat, but we are passing the hat metaphorically in any case. It costs money to rent space in the Gelber Center, and we are not rich organizations. And to carry on our other work as well, even just the production of literature and so on, we do need donations, and I hope people will be generous. Our third speaker is Fabienne Presente. And as her name suggests, she is a Francophone Jew, born in France of Turkish and Bulgarian parents. And she lived for 5 years in Israel. And her work subsequently, 20 years of work for Mideast Peace, earned her the Helen Caldicott International Peace Prize in 1999. So, Fabienne's got her story.
What am I starting? One more thank you. But first of all, I think I'd most like to say that I'm very, very happy to be with three other Jewish women here in the Jewish Community Center in Montreal after quite a few years of work on these particular issues. It may be the first time we've been able to set foot into the Jewish community and actually start a dialogue and speak with our family. Many years ago, when I did come back from, I did spend 5 years in the Middle East. I covered Lebanon, I covered the Iraq-Iran war, and I covered, of course, Cisjordania, West Bank, and Gaza, and Israel. So I was in the Middle East for that period of time in the 80s. When I came back, I did sort of push myself at one point to talk in synagogues because I wanted to speak to other Jews. I didn't feel there was much point in always speaking to others who were not Jews. I wanted us to talk to each other. And it was a very, very difficult exercise. And I think what really bothered me the most at that particular point was that the only reason I could speak, the only reason that we would listen to me maybe for 2.5 seconds more than usual, was that I'm a Jew. Had I been a non-Jew, what I was saying was simply not tenable. I would have been called a racist, I would have been called an anti-Semite. And by the way, as a Jew, I'm still called racist and I'm still called an anti-Semite. But I think today, and I realize that things have progressed much further on from that point. As Lillian said, I am a Sephardic Jew, which is an ethnic division among within the Jewish family. And I'm speaking a lot about family because the more I thought about, you know, how do I present this whole question of being what I have been for many, many years, which is an anti-Zionist Jew. Years ago, we were maybe three, four of us, and now we're quite a few more. And I want to put, for me, one thing straight. An anti-Zionist Jew, for me, is first and foremost all about being a Jew. It's not about being pro-Palestinian first. It's about being critical about a certain particular facet of Jewish life. In other words, years ago, many, many years ago, even 200, 300 years ago, one was not a Zionist in order to become a Jew. One was a Jew. What's happened today is that if you're not a Zionist, how are you supposed to be a Jew? And it's a very, very, it's become a difficult part of our identity. And I think that is why I'm talking about a family. That is why I'm talking about the whole question of criticism within that family. Years ago, we used to not be able to speak about incest, about violence within families. I liken this to this particular question. This is our family, and there are certain I'll use the word injustices going on. Why is it that we are not able to speak out about those particular sicknesses? I don't want to use this word. What is a good word for maladif? Injustice.
Flaws.
Flaws, thank you. And I think for myself, it became very clear after being you have spoken, Shira, a pro-Israeli young, I'm going to kill Arabs, young girl, who wanted to go off and join the IDF and whose father said, not on your life because you're a girl and you're not going into any army. And went on all the pro-Israeli rallies, did all the marches, and I really did want to kill Arabs. And I came from a family that I carried the Second World War on my back, simply because I'm from parents who went through this particular experience. And we couldn't criticize. Anything happened in the family, it would be an accident somewhere, there would be anything. I would say to my grandmother, you know, oh my God, look at these people. She said, it wasn't you, she would have been in the war. Right? You know, you could not say anything about anything, and it was the war. My father, who wore the star, was beaten, was tortured, was humiliated, never got over that. And I knew very, very well what it was like to live his humiliation, their humiliation, secondhand. I had grown up with it. I had grown up with the sense of you're going to be persecuted at every door, as he would tell me. It was a very reverse sort of thing. Don't ever say you're Jewish, you're going to be persecuted. And then he said, never forget that you're Jew. I was like, what do I do now? So I have basically never been forgetting I'm a Jew, but in a sense, in a way that did not please my father. But bon. And this is what I meant about the family. This is what I meant about becoming, for me, when I became an anti-Zionist, it was questioning a certain political ideology, a certain nationalism, a certain chauvinism, which had risen from fear, which had risen from humiliation, everything I had grown up with, and carrying. And I'm looking at it after a while, going, why am I afraid? Why I can't say? Why I can't? And I also am glad to be here for another reason, and that is I spent many hours of my young life reading about Jewish women dissidents, and this is part of, you know, this is basically what we're talking about here tonight, and that was their courage to speak out about whatever was going on in their particular communities as Jews that they were not going to put up with, whether it was class issues, whether it was social working issues, whether it was poverty, whether all of those issues, Jewish women got up and they said something about it, and you better listen to them. Well, we've been getting up for years on this particular question, and it's a tough one. And when it comes to talking about the wall, I think that it is not a very, I think it's actually a very fortunate thing that that wall is being built. And I think it's fortunate because now we've got it in our face. It's been a wall of silence for at least the 20 years I've been working at it, in this subject, I mean, not at the wall. It is a wall of silence. We may not speak about what is going on in Israel. We will not speak about the fact that we will not recognize the existence of Palestinians. We will not speak about occupation. We will not, there are many things we cannot speak about. Someone got up at one of a talk I gave the other day and was yelling at me and saying to me, you know, you don't realize that Israel is a democratic society, that in Israel we can talk about all of the issues. I said, yes, I do. The point is we can't talk about it anywhere else. So that's why we're here, and we have to talk about it, because it is in our family giving us quite a headache. That wall is walling us where? We've walled ourselves, as my family did in a sense, into a small little world. We had to be Jews among Jews so as to be together, to confront. We had to do that. We had to be proud. As we were saying before, I grew up as you did. The kibbutzim, yay, the everything. You know, it was the most marvelous place in the world because we had come out from being weak. We had been come out from being to be exterminated, and we had created a new land. Until I got to the new land. Well, the first time I went to the new land, it was kibbutzim and it was fine. And the second time I got to the new land, I was covering issues from a little bit of a different perspective. And I'm going into my own family, whose children were grown, who were brought up, educated in Israel, who did not know what Palestinian was. I was going into the West Bank to cover the West Bank. I was going into Gaza. And my cousins would come in at 3 o'clock in the morning to my room and going, Aunt, where are you going? I said, I'm going to Gaza. What? Gaza. What's there? I said, Palestinian people are living there, and there's this and this an issue, etc. And they go, you got to be kidding. I said, no, I'm not kidding. The West Bank, the same thing. Until my cousin came to me, their mother, and said, would you please leave the house? I was getting ready. And I'm trying to speak to her and say, look, Véronique, this is a situation. She said, no, I teach Arabs Hebrew, our Arabs. They don't exist. And you're not telling my children that they will exist. And it reminded me of speaking to about these questions with Middle East groups in Europe or in North America. And I would have people come up to me and say, you know, because those boots in Auschwitz, in the museum, they were Polish soldiers' boots. It's a lie. These are Arabic or Palestinian students coming to speak to me. And I tell them, if those boots are a lie, you also do not exist. It's very simple. So let's get it straight. And I think this is always the route that I am taking, and always the route for me that came from a question of putting the things in the right place. That we have walled ourselves in, whether it's through hatred, whether it's through misunderstanding, that wall that is standing now is the proof that nobody else is going to throw us into the sea but ourselves. Because there's a wall that walls out, but there's a wall that walls in. And we're walled in. It's like facing our own particular, the result of our own blindness. What is so difficult is to not to understand, to try and understand why is it that to speak about this subject, as you've said also, both of you, is inadmissible. And I think that what has happened in the last 20 years, anyways, is that it has become so great, it has become such a, how would you say, such a different violent issue that we cannot put our heads in the sand. However, I'm not so sure, and I'm not continuing to be so positive, that a major part of the Jewish community is still willing to see that. And I say that because, much as you said, when you go to Israel, we are taught about Israel in a certain manner. We are not taught to see the racism in Israel. We're not taught to see the difficult economic situation in Israel. We're not taught to see the effects of militarization on the civil society, on the women. When I was there, there was the first women's refuge for women. What is a refuge? Shelter.
Shelter.
For battered women. That shelter for battered women in Jerusalem was surrounded by barbed wire, and there were soldiers guarding. Because men would come with their guns to get their women out. Their women were... Militarization has also led, has exacerbated racism within our own Jewish community. Being in Israel is not an easy question for those who are not white European, of white European origin. This has been from the beginning in 1948 and even before 1948, before the establishment of the State of Israel. Now, it has become to a crisis point, which the occupation is not in any way helping, if I can speak that way. The occupation is exacerbating this whole question. It's part of the whole pot. We have to be able to look at the kind of situation we've created there. That the Ashkenazi Jews of Israel and the Sephardic Jews of Israel have very little to speak to each other about. Then we have from the Sephardic, you have different branches, different ethnic groupings within the Sephardic, like you have different ethnic groupings within the Ashkenazim. Even in our own community, we don't acknowledge the history of injustice within those particular communities. If we don't start doing that now, somehow, and how can we make even our own Jewish community a much more rich and a richer community with a future? Our future is not in tiny little compartments. Our future is together. We have in Israel also to continue on the question of militarization, because I'm not going to go into a million thousands of little, personal incidents, which would take hours. But I will tell you one just to show you. I went with the Israeli troops in 1982 when they went up towards Beirut, and there was the invasion of Lebanon. In Lebanon, in Beirut, the ceasefire happened every Friday, and I'd love it if somebody here knew why the ceasefire was happening every Friday between the Israelis and the Lebanese. Does anyone know why? No.
Shabbos.
No, I wish it was Shabbos.
Well, it isn't the Muslim.
Yeah, but that was not the reason. Dallas. Do you remember the television show Dallas? Everything was stopped on Friday because of Dallas, which put perspective on things. The other reason things were stopped was that they had to play, because in Israel nobody makes ends meet on 1 month. It's not possible. So you are always playing the stock market. In the tanks, there was a television and then a stock market, and then the machine to make sure that every soldier can play in the stock market. One, you know, there were things like this which would just blow my mind sometimes. And then, so there was this whole economic and class. This was just a little anecdote of that. When I came back at one point from a tour there, one of my young cousins, who lives in a kibbutz not far from Ashkelon, was a traumatized 19-year-old when he came back from his second tour in Beirut. So traumatized that when I started speaking very quietly within the family about the question of Israel and the Arabs and the question of Palestinians, trying very quietly to mention this, he got up, spit in his mother's face, because she was a Jew from Algerian origin. You see, it's not rational, all of this. It's not a nice little sociological study. And it's not propaganda, and it's not pamphleteering. It's a very, very difficult question of a lot of broken identities and traumatized people. Now, I was just as traumatized because he got my fist in his face. But that was just, you don't spit on your mother's face, you know, in your mother's face. I don't care who you are. No. All this kind of, you know, these kind of experiences, when you go there, for me to go to Israel is not a quiet time. I can go to the beach. You know, it doesn't work, because even when I went to the beach, there were the Israeli soldiers came, you know, it was like, bon. But going, for me to go to Israel, is to realize that Canada Park, which is a nice place full of forests where Jewish children in Canada have bought, their parents often have bought them trees there. And my father, since he immigrated here, had decided to buy me trees, so I have my trees. It's like, ugh, I have my trees over there with my name on them. Bon. So I went, and around, as I'm walking, I'm looking at the stones that form the little wall around the Canada Park. And I realized that there had Arabic inscriptions on them. And I read Arabic. And those inscriptions were the inscriptions of the homeowners, the homes that had been destroyed, the 365 or 52 villages that had been destroyed in 1948 and do not appear on any single map of history or geography that Israeli children are taught. It doesn't, as you've already well said, they don't exist. They've been wiped off the map. I cannot personally, and this is exactly what I say when I go into these questions about anti-Zionism, I cannot say nothing about that. They tried to wipe us out. I'm not going to countenance wiping them out. I'm not going to countenance young Israeli soldiers who paint white crosses on the back of Palestinians and South Lebanese that they let go into the fields of South Lebanon when they release them, painted with white cross on their back, which I have seen, and then they shoot at them. Should we put Magen Davids there? Now, I'm not being inflammatory, because there's an awful lot of personal anecdotes that can go in there. Whether it's getting into buses at times when I was there, it was just before the Intifada, the first Intifada, and then the first Intifada just enclenché, began. So I went with with Palestinian students with their permission on the buses that take them to school, and I was dressed as a Palestinian girl. I spoke enough Arabic that I can get away with it. And I wanted to see what's happening. I mean, I think my whole point is always, we cannot say that the Palestinian people are all terrorists, as would my father. We cannot just blanket say anything about any people. I want to go and see. I want to go and see. So, I am in a bus where Israeli soldiers stop children. Well, children, teenagers. Oh, teenagers. They throw the young men out of the bus like this. and push. These kids did nothing to them. They are going to school. They get rifle butts in the back of them. They're thrown on the ground. They're humiliated. Their mallets are opened. Papers thrown like this and laughed at. No, I can't do it. The kids are all there. The girls are all like this. Petrified. And they beat them. Why did they beat this kid for? He's going to school. So one time when I tried to take pictures, I had great complicity, thank God, with these kids, because I'm like, and they're going, okay, well, so I'm going up or down. In other words, I can stand and I can't stand. And the one time when I see this Israeli soldier beating this university student, and I take a picture, and I know he heard the click, and I was like, God. So, you know, back, everything is hidden under me, like all my equipment is hidden. And I knew that I was putting these kids to risk. And I thought, you know, how damn courageous can they be that they could be in prison for this? They can be going through a lot of torture, but they want it known. And this is many years ago. Now we know a lot more, but they want it known. It's not in my name as a Jew that this is being done. It's not in my name that in Nablus when I went and the young students asked me, would I like to see their backs, that I will accept to see the cigarette burns and the razor cuts on their black on their backs. I will not accept it. And I will also not be told that it is propaganda, that it is a lie, that it is to be a traitor. No, we're people. We're Jews. We're people. We're people who are Jews. Yeshayahu Leibovitz, who is an Israeli philosopher who died about a year ago, and was a man I went to see, and a very orthodox religious Jew who was also very questioning about Zionism, which is why I went to interview him. Anyway. And this man, before he would even speak to me, ask me something, he said, all right, before I speak to you, I want you to answer me one question. What is your mission as a Jew? Which just, sometimes, as I said, it's difficult being a Jew. I have to have a mission too. So the thing, I said, I have to think of something, because I know this guy's not going to talk to me if I don't think of something. It has to sound good. You know, you're like this. And I look at him. I said, Professor Leibovitz, I said, I think the only thing I think of to do as a Jew is that if I can add my little piece of sand, my little grain of sand, onto the little tiny monticule of sand which is forming, which means that which works to the which works. I'm thinking in French. Sorry. Okay. Which means that Jews will be part of the human race always. That we will be an integral part of the human race. That is all I want to. That is what I consider my particular Jewish mission. He said, come in. I passed the test. But no, I spoke for 8 hours with this man of great, great, great knowledge. And I know it didn't matter that I answered the question right or wrong. It was a question of spirit. It's a question of état d'esprit, of your heart. And that is that, as all of us are saying, is that it is very much a question of implication into Jewish life to be doing the work we're doing, at whatever level we can do it at. Because I don't like to see either in Israel when I speak to Moroccan Jews in Israel, and I will thank them in Arabic, to be insulted. They will to be insulted back in Arabic, to be screamed at because I spoke to them in Arabic. This happened to me in Jaffa. I was invited finally to dinner, and I said, yeah, thank you, etc. And they said, we're Jews! I said, I know you're Jews. Well, I just said, thank you in the language you're all speaking to each other. "You don't realize we're Jews. You tell me we're Arabs." I said, "You're not." I'm like, okay. But it was a wonderful illustration of racism. What was less than them? That, the Arab, as Golda Meir said, la lie de la terre. Okay, started a long time ago, these issues. So they could not be associated to that, but they spoke that language. That was part of their culture. Yet they were poor. There's class, there's racism. It's all very elemental, actually. To not talk about that, I think, is to continue to earn the wall we have. Because I think it's not just a wall to exclude Palestinians. The Palestinian question you have sufficiently well covered, and I thought I'd cover this part of it. It excludes the Palestinians, yes. And it has made us continue to live in the ghetto we never seem to have left. And that's, thank you.